Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
Very privileged today to be discussing private AI and data fabric and securing your data in the cloud with Malcolm Ross from Appian. He's the SVP of product strategy, and he's been a product leader in enterprise software with over 22 years of experience in that area. So we're going to have a really interesting topic. It's not going to be super, super technical. It's just going to be, you know, focused on data fabric, what it is, enterprise data fabric, et cetera, and obviously generative AI and the risks within cybersecurity and why you need private AI, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to thank you, first of all, Malcolm, for joining me. I'm looking forward to digging into these really important topics. And it's a real, real pleasure. So What is Appian's view of process automation, and why is that essential for businesses today?
Well, if we think about where we are today, and where probably the past 3-4 years as well around process automation, it's been a very technology-driven kind of approach. 3-4 years ago, it was really about robotic process automation. Now we see a lot of technology interest in artificial intelligence, but this hasn't been the case. It's a bit of an anomaly, I think, that we see today that's very technology focused. And because in previous years, going back 1, 2, 3, 4 decades, it's really been more philosophy and methodology approach. So if you look back to the 70s, 80s, there was that philosophy of Kaizen, which is a Japanese automotive manufacturing kind of self-improvement process, which was brought over from Japan to the United States and evolved into initiative like the U.S. Navy started some things in the mid-80s, which evolved into total quality management in the 80s and 90s, which evolved into ISO 9000 and Six Sigma and Lean. And these weren't technology approaches. They were philosophical and methodology approaches around continuous process improvement. I think what we're seeing today is with the advent of extreme digitization, we'll say over the past decade, there's been a lot of opportunity, low-hanging fruit, to apply technology to achieve greater automation. But now I'd say most companies are realizing kind of a lot of those low-hanging fruit of automations have been accomplished. And they're looking at these new technologies like AI and their established ones like RPA and other automations, and more looking at end-to-end process automation. So I think we're seeing a little bit of resurgence of interest around that kind of more philosophical methodology approach of process improvement, which has a much stronger technology blend into it, rather than just saying, hey, I'm going to reorder people in the manufacturing line, going to measure things very statistically around product quality. I'm going to do the same methodology around end-to-end process automation and then look at best ways to apply technology, to apply artificial intelligence, to apply RPA. So I think we're right on the cusp of this blend of that higher level perspective again with a very technology-driven approach of automation.
So RPA is robot process automation, right? And are you using that term in regards to like robots within factories and stuff like that? Or is there a broader kind of term?
We're talking about software robots. So I think we probably all experience this ourselves when you're required to fill out a medical form online or insurance form, and sometimes I need to I need to copy some information from here and paste it into here to fill out that form. Now, this type of activity is done at a huge scale at companies like insurance organizations, financial services, who want to make sure customer data is properly input in all the different systems. And these are software robots that have been used to then do that automatic copy paste and that repetitive stuff that humans were doing in computers are now doing in software robots. And then we've seen that really focus over the past 3-4 years. But as software robots are doing that, there's a lot of decisions that need to be made around what type of content is it? How do I pick the right application? what do I do this? And that's where artificial intelligence is applying a lot of value to help humans, or to, in a completely automated sense, make those decisions using artificial intelligence. And then we see the latter side of that, which is now generative AI, which generative AI is humans also do a lot of things like write emails to customers, communicate like their latest insurance policy or things like this. A lot of AI is now being used to generate these communications and different types of content as well. So it's kind of the latest applications of AI technology.
Right, right. Thank you. Thank you. I think it's important to kind of just stay focused on these terms, just so that people don't get confused, because I even get confused, you know, and I've been sort of studying this, not obviously not as long as you have, but I've been sort of studying it for, I don't know, probably 12 years or something. And I get confused. No. So I think it's important. But when it comes to like data fabric, I'm not confused about what that actually is, but I think it would be useful if you could explain what data fabric is and the role it plays in process automation. That would be really helpful for the audience, please.
Yeah, and I'll trust you to stop me if things require more clarity, because I've been only doing this for like 35 years.
Oh, 35 years. Wow. Okay.
I have my degree in computer science and information science. So stop me if I'm getting too technical.
Thank you.
But data fabric is, how to describe, the best way to always understand technology is to maybe first understand the problem. You know, why does it exist? What's the problem that it exists? And the problem in many businesses is that data exists in many locations. You know, we have customer data, I have product information data, I have inventory data, how many products I have on my shelves. Data is dispersed all over the place, but businesses need to make decisions on that data. They need to create processes that go across that data, such as when a customer orders a new product, I need to deduct one of my products from the inventory, so I no longer have that product for sale because a customer's bought it. So I want to record like who the customer was, how they paid for it, what my current inventory is, do I need to backfill that inventory? And there's this coordination of all this data that requires me to consolidate that into what we call a data fabric. So data fabric first is a unification of that data, so you can see it holistically. I can see all the data together as one object rather than logging into different systems and seeing it. And then a data fabric more uniquely, as compared to other terms, we'll say like a data warehouse or a data lake, also knows how to transact across that data. So when I do have a transaction, like customer orders product, I need to go to inventory management system, do -1 on that product because I don't have that anymore. Well, I need to write to that data. So data fabric is a architecture which facilitates automation by first consolidating data into a holistic view of everything that's going on, and then also knows how to transact with those different systems, such as, again, I deduct the product. I also add to my customer purchase history, oh, I know that they purchased this product. So multiple systems inside that. So it's this coordinator of data across all your enterprise systems.
Thank you. That's really helpful, really, really succinct explanation of that. So basically, then you would want to secure that and any applications that you build using AI, right? Because there are all these models. There is ChatGPT, and there are all these models, right? But actually, you guys work with private AI, don't you? So I know Appian's doing a lot with AI. So what's the significance of that, and how is it different to OpenAI and ChatGPT and the approach there and AI as we generally know it?
I think we should probably talk first around the issue of data security in itself. So as we know, there's new regulations that came out over the past decade plus around GDPR in Europe, around California data protection rights, and these are only expanding to government agencies, and they have really serious consequences to a corporation who's not properly governing that data. So let's take that same example I talked about with a customer purchasing a product, and let's just say, for example, that I'm a multinational corporation based in America, and my customer was a German customer who purchased that product. Well, there's all sorts of now legal regulation that start to apply here around where I store that customer data about that German customer, as well as how I retain that information about that customer. Because that customer under GDPR laws in the EU has something called the right to be forgotten. So they can say, well, I don't want you to remember that I purchased that product or any of my personal information. And by the way, also, none of my data should leave the province of Germany. So you can't take all my customer data and pipe it off to Taiwan or America or someplace and do some further analytics on it. I have rights on my data, which is what these laws are about. So organizations really need to think deeply around how they organize data, how they secure the data. An element of Appian's approach is what we call a row-level security through the data fabric. So what we can do here is say, okay, well, I want to make sure that account executives or managers in America cannot see customer data in Germany. So you can set up these metadata rules throughout the data fabric to ensure the proper people only see the proper information based on their geolocation or location of data, things like this. So that's an important attribute of looking at data, is getting the security right up front. Now, when it comes into AI, it's even more interesting. So you need to think about AI is like a human. I'm going to teach you. So for example, Nathaniel, I'm going to share some personal information about myself. And then I'll imagine your artificial intelligence. So for example, I was raised in Florida, grew up a lot of my life going to the Bahamas. My family owned a house in the Bahamas, so very kind of Caribbean, South Florida lifestyle I grew up in. Now I'm going to ask you, under my data privacy rights, can you please forget that information? And you got to think AI works just like a human. So if someone else asks you, like, hey, Nathaniel, do you know anyone who happened to grow up in South Florida and visit the Bahamas a lot? And you're like, oh, wait, you're not allowed to remember that. It's like you cannot unremember that information. And AI works in a very similar way, that when I give data to an AI system, I'm training it to behave and predict things in a certain manner based on the data I provided it. So you need to restrict access to AI just like you restrict access to humans. So you need to be very cognizant of the data that AI is exposed to, so that it can't remember things, or it shouldn't be able to remember things it should never have saw. So for example, let's take it into a real world example again. Let's go back to that German customer and say, German customer comes in and says, under GDPR law, I want to execute my right to be forgotten. But now an AI model has been trained on that German customer data. And you can't really untrain an AI model. It's based on a net neural graph, very similar to how a brain works and how it's doing prediction algorithms on the likelihood of how I know this customer works. So it really gets into a hairy situation of like, well, I can't really unforget you anymore. So can I even be compliant with GDPR? So the right technique is to just be very cognizant of the data I shuffle to AI, just in the same way I would provide to a human, to make sure AI is never exposed to data that I might need to forget sometime in the future. Hope that makes sense.
It does. Yes. I've been playing around with ChatGPT, like a lot of people that we know in the tech industry, right, and others. And you know, they've introduced this kind of this button that you can click, and it's like, well, you can't use my data, but then how do you know they're not using your data? Because it's a closed system, right? Like it's not public, is it, at the end of the day? So you either train your own model, right, or you have some sort of framework that goes over the top of one of these applications and then plugs into your data fabric. Is that like a fair explanation of how it would work?
It's the same kind of concept, again, of a human. You need to treat AI like humans. And if you don't want a human to know this, then don't show it to them, because a human cannot unforget something. Mm-hmm. Same thing applies to AI. So you want to be very careful of either anonymizing data before it goes to AI, or obscuring data so that it cannot see that information. So you can get the same benefits of prediction and likelihood outcomes that AI is providing, but not the specificity of customer data. The other challenge we see, kind of expanding on this topic of private AI versus also public AI, is the fastest path to leveraging AI often is adopting some of these public AI services. You see these like very attractive services like ChatGPT and things like this. And well, it's like, wow, I can start writing my customer emails using ChatGPT. So what am I doing now? I'm taking the customer information, I'm sending it to a public AI service. And now that public AI service is learning my customer data. So, well, that's right away violating some laws around customer data. And then second, you're taking confidential information about your business and giving it to a third party. What's that third party doing? It's like, how are maybe that company is going to come up with a competitive service, like maybe a major cloud provider comes up with a payment processing service, that, and I'm a financial services company. So maybe they're using that data to actually develop competitive products to my business, and I'm freely giving my data that then is maybe going to be used to compete against me in the future. So you have to be very cognizant again of what public AI service you're using and what data you're shuffling to those services, because not only is it violating laws, but also it can come back and they can build something better than your product today.
Yeah, because it learns at a tremendous rate, doesn't it, at the end of the day? It's a fascinating time to be alive, right? But there are so many people that think this is new, and there's this massive like hype around it all. But actually, like, you know, you've been working in tech for 30 plus years, right? And so it's like, but AI isn't anything new, is it? It's been around since like they did the presidential campaign for Kennedy, right, back in the day, and he was elected. Yeah, and before that even, right? It's you know, I'm trying to deal with the hype and just calm everybody down, and that's where I'm at, really.
In a way, though, it's like you shouldn't be calm, because yes, actuarial mathematics has been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. Statistical predictions, things like this. The problem is the compute required to do actuarial mathematics has always been very high. There's as far as, you know, the amount of CPU and processing time that's required to do very large data set calculations.
Right.
What we're seeing is an impact of economics of scale of physical computers and compute processing power. Mm-hmm. Has increased that I can do now these very large data calculations quite easily and fast. You know, these are based on these GPU models, the graphic processing units like by NVIDIA, which are coming out at scale now. So it's really the difference between like 5 years ago and today, is that the accessibility of this technology to do large data compute has been reduced down so much that it becomes more accessible. And we're going to see these kind of the expansion of AI technology explode. It's similar to that, you know, when we think about the iPhone moment to Apple. The iPhone was built on the backbone of miniaturization of compute technology and batteries. So once we had miniaturization of battery technology and compute that can fit in the palm of your hand, then we had computers in the palm of our hand, and then the technology exploded to be right, ubiquitous in everyday life. And that's what we're experiencing right now with AI, I'd say.
Right. Yeah, it's actually, I think, the biggest opportunity since the invention of the internet, really, perhaps even the Industrial mm-hmm. Revolution. Like it's completely transforming people's lives, right? But, you know, I talk about this all the time, and it's absolutely fascinating. But how is Appian thinking about the possibilities presented by generative AI?
Well, our first philosophy is that generative AI and AI in general, it's not a feature or capability. It's a philosophy of how you bring digital products to market. So we've adopted similar philosophies like low code, for example. I can test that you cannot buy a low code product, which is, you know, a design tool that doesn't require coding. What you can buy is software from vendors like Appian who adopt low code as a philosophy. And that low code philosophy means that I'm going to try to make, as a product manager, my product as easy to use by a non-technical person as possible to get value from. AI is the same thing, that I'm going to leverage AI as a philosophy in almost all aspects of the product to achieve the customer goals as easy and fluidly as possible. And again, that's a big part of what AI is, I think, is it has so many applications in so many different areas that it's just a undercurrent of acceleration of how you build digital products and how you bring those products to drive value to customers. Now, when we're thinking about generative AI specifically, a big part of that is just the human machine barrier. How does a human express their intent as naturally as possible and get the computer to do what they want? You know, we see this with things like the self-driving cars. Like, I just want to tell it, go from point A to point B, and then the car just figures it out, AI. Same thing with, hey, I need to build a software application that captures mortgage loan applications and then sends it to a financial services expert to review, use it, determines automatically the risk score, and then approves or disapproves that mortgage. I could just use that natural language to describe it, and it builds the entire application for me. So I know you heard me talking about it, but that would be as much as I would say. I would say that to the computer. It would understand my intent by interpreting natural language and turn that natural language intent into a fully functional application inside the business operations.
Right.
So that's kind of an area that we're looking at as far as, again, expression of intent to building digital solutions and then using AI to refine and improve those over time as well.
Right. I like the way that you talk about Kaizen and how that is that's fundamental to your philosophy, because it's super important, right? You can't get away from that, can you? Because you have to launch, mm-hmm. right? You've got to launch a product, and then you obviously you need to improve it as you kind of go along. But it's very exciting at the moment. I do agree with, you know, perhaps not being too calm, because the developments that we're seeing like every week are actually mind-blowing. I mean, there was a Croatian company that was just bought by Google, which is a mathematical calculator, right? Mm-hmm. Which is going to be probably integrated into, either they'll shelve it or they'll integrate it into Bard, right? And then things are going to get really interesting, aren't they? When you've got these sorts of number crunching power as well, right? Adding on to the words and then the compute and then, you know, all of these things are fascinating, absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
I was going to say, when I first kind of digging in these technologies a year or 2 years ago, you know, I had my epiphany moment where I realized, you know, I built my career as a software developer and, you know, deep in technology. And when I see how AI now can build software, the first thing I asked her, what are my kids going to do? And I was like, well, you know, plumber. Yeah, AI can't, you know, go into a house and run pipes yet. But it's definitely going to be challenging as far as finding our way, but it's also exciting because it unlocks greater potential for all humanity to accomplish our goals. But it will be a challenge as far as how careers will evolve and how technology will evolve very rapidly over the next 5 to 10 years.
Oh, absolutely. I've been giving it a lot of thought. My daughter, she's 11, and you know, I've been sort of thinking, mm-hmm. well, if you think about how many jobs, they're not even created yet, the jobs that these kids and young adults even are going to be doing in the next 3 years. Like, and it does boggle my brain actually when I sort of ponder it. But it's like, I mean, if you turn around to me 10 years, 15 years ago and said I'd be doing this, I'd say, well, I'm not sure about that. But I think the skills of adaptability, being able to adapt to, you know, these new technologies are absolutely key, and learn things quickly. I think, you know, those are the sort of pieces of advice I've been receiving. But when it comes to a modern business being an intelligent business, How is Appian helping businesses to be intelligent?
Well, the most important thing in looking at an intelligent business operations is seeing the forest for the trees, as they say. Understanding, you know, the full end-to-end process and where automation can be applied. You know, oftentimes AI, RPA, these can be seen as shiny objects that you rapidly just kind of jam in somewhere. But then it's looking at kind of the overall customer experience, the overall efficiency of process, the handoff between humans and AI. And that's where we apply most of the value, to not just be a single point solution of automation, but a holistic solution for automation that allows you to make those smart decisions around how handoffs occur between technology and the best way to apply AI to achieve the maximum effect. And then also an agile platform that allows you to change it over time. So, you know, that I think that's also where the overall market's going, is thinking more holistically around process, making smart decisions, and not just taking existing processes and making them more efficient, but rethinking about customer engagement, rethinking about how I run core operations in the end, and re-architecting those in a software platform.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense. So in terms of a modern business requires modern ways of thinking. I mean, you've explained that really a little bit, I think, in your answer. Was there anything else you'd like to add about how do you Appian enable this?
Well, it's really about, you know, I'm actually doing some content on this over the next week as well around next gen enterprises. And we need to look deeply as a enterprise IT organization at the things also we want to stop doing. What I often call the janitorial work of IT, you know, maintenance, operations, upgrades, things that simply pay down technical debt, which is, you know, maintaining technical systems and allow for greater technical innovation. The pressure by our customers to digitally innovate is just accelerating, even with, you know, macroeconomic challenges. The technology curve continues to just accelerate, which means that if organizations aren't really focused on technical innovation, they're going to be struggling to compete. So Appian really focuses on not just, again, that platform for automation, but a platform that really allows you to not worry about the burden of IT maintenance that's going to evolve the platform over time. Little things like when the new iPhone comes out or Android releases a new version, how do you make sure the app you built yesterday works on an iPhone of tomorrow? Things that you don't have to worry about that are just taken care of by these more modern enterprise platforms like Appian that reduce technical debt and allow you to spend more of your time on innovation and digital transformation.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed speaking to you. I could speak to you for ages about all of these sort of techie subjects, because I'm hugely interested, to be honest, in all of these topics, you know. And so basically, when it comes to Appian Europe, that's going to be happening in the next three, 4 months. And I'm going to hopefully be there. It's in London. So I'm looking forward to kind of learning more about what's kind of going on in this space. And, you know, look out for information on that if you're watching this. And I want to thank you once again. I've thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you and learning lots more about some great technologies. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.